This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The COVID-19 pandemic has shown us that we cannot take the future of education for granted. The future likes to surprise us, so by imagining alternative futures for education, we can better think through the outcomes, develop agile and responsive systems, and plan for future shocks. So how can schools today prepare students for a world that doesn't yet exist? Today, I'm joined by Anthony Partington. He's the executive principal of 3 KDU schools to discuss how our education system can and should be reshaped to keep up to date with the growing demands of the 21st century. Welcome, Anthony. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for joining me today. So I'd just like to get to know you a little bit better, Anthony. Maybe you can just briefly walk me through your career today. I was reading your bio. It's very interesting. I understand there's a passion for literature and an interest in lifelong learning led you to train as an English teacher at Cambridge.
That's right, yeah. Although when I first was thinking about what to do after university, I actually went to work in the media. So it's quite nice to be in a radio studio. I think one of the reasons that I wanted to be a teacher is because I had some great teachers myself, and I think that's quite a common thing among teachers. And in fact, the teacher who set me on the path to being an English teacher was a Chinese-Malaysian teacher in my school in Manchester, in the UK. Mm-hmm. And she had that passion for learning. She had that drive. And these are, you know, some of the characteristics that I like to see in my fellow teachers, and I hope I have myself, but also the characteristics we want to develop in our young people. And so it seemed pretty obvious to me that I would study English. There's a little question there after what you do with an English degree. And as I said, I thought about the media, but my passion had always been about learning in of itself and how we learn and just expanding that idea of learning. And so I felt myself, even though I was working in the City of London, drawn back to this idea to study once again. And I went to Cambridge and I studied to be a teacher at the University of Cambridge. And then I worked and lived in the Cambridgeshire area for 16 years and did a variety of teaching jobs, obviously an English teacher, but I was a head of year, head of department, assistant principal, vice principal, principal. And then I looked across education across a group of schools. And it was at that point that I was approached to come to Malaysia. And 2019, I moved to Malaysia, and I've been here ever since.
Yeah, and here you are. Mm. And I guess, you know, you've sort of been through so many different sectors of the education. I mean, but looking back at your own education, right, and you mentioned a teacher who inspired you, what were some of the things that worked best for you when you were learning, you know, when you were still in the classroom, perhaps good things that you really enjoy, but also things that you wish had been done better?
Yeah, I think that in truth, I don't remember too many of my maths lessons.
Same here.
And I think the reason for that is, you know, they were nothing out of the ordinary. What I remember about school are the different learning experiences, perhaps those that go beyond the academic curriculum. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important part of a British-style education. It's a very rounded education. It's a whole education. Lots of those things were, you know, the same teacher in the theatre productions that we put on, or being involved in sports teams, learning outside of school. And a lot of what I learned about school is skill rather than actually knowledge, you know. And so I think we obviously have moved on a lot in schools, and sometimes the areas where it didn't work were there was no engagement between the teacher and the student. Mm-hmm. There was no personal connection. There was no challenge, and those are the things that I think we should strive for in schools. Mm-hmm. To make them exciting, to make them interesting, but also to prepare students for the future, because in the modern world, you can pick up knowledge by researching things on the internet, etc. But you need to have the skills to be able to do that. Yeah. And you need to have the skills to engage with other people and to work in a modern workplace.
Mm-hmm. And to have those interactions, isn't it? And those build up those friendships, build up those relationships, and that's going to, you know, carry on through in your adult life, in your working life. Those are such important experiences, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. And of course, as you mentioned, you know, you came here in 2019. Now, you're the executive principal of Sri KDU Schools, as I mentioned. Talk to me a little bit about Sri KDU Schools. I know it was one of the earliest private and international schools in Malaysia. How would you say the school has progressed? Maybe you can walk me through some of the changes and the growth that's happened within the Sri KDU Group, particularly this year?
Yes, so we're actually in our 20th year of operation, and right, we opened in 2003. We were offering at that point a private national curriculum program. I think one of the key features of our schools is we've always driven those leadership development programs. We've always enhanced our curriculum in the arts and the sports and the wider culture. Mm-hmm. And it was for that reason that Sri KDU was invited to open one of what you might describe as the second generation of international schools. Mm-hmm. So you've got some really old international schools from maybe colonial days in Malaysia. But this kind of approach in the late 90s, early 2000s, where there are different pathways offered in education, that's something that Sri KDU was a pioneer in, and we were able to develop our international school at Kota Damansara in 2011. Mm-hmm. We've now got a school in Klang, which opened a few years ago, and another school, which is currently GEMS International School, is joining the Sri KDU group. Mm-hmm. Presently. Okay. I think what we want to do is continue to develop as a group. I said earlier on that I think some of the learning experiences that children have, which are beyond the academic, are really vital and important. And we have all of those elements of character development or enhancement across all of our schools, whether they're national curriculum or whether they are international curriculum. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we're really focusing on this year. We've been looking back at all of the students who've been at our schools, mm-hmm. and they have a very impressive track record themselves. But I think the key and the thing that draws them all together is that they've developed something which I think is part of that culture, which is an aspirant culture, but it's a resilient culture as well. And as I said, they've gone on to lead in their own fields, which is quite remarkable. And mm-hmm. when you've had 20 years of experience, yeah. you can have some really great stories from our alumni as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of your alumni, I'm sure many of them are also choosing to send, you know, their kids to Sri KDU schools and, you know, parents, of course. Why do you think, you know, parents keep choosing to send their kids to Sri KDU schools? And how does your school prepare students to thrive in this sort of new normal of education that everybody is talking about now?
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think over 20 years, a real community has developed, mm-hmm. and we have a number of parents who themselves were students at Sri KDU, yeah. many years back. And that's really important. You know, across all of our schools, the key is engagement with our community. Parents invest a lot in education, and it really is important that they are able to see what learning, what experiences their children are having. Quite often, schools are a bit of a black box that nobody knows what's going on
in
them.
There, yeah.
And it's really important that schools open out, that they're transparent, and also that they support parents. You know, you talked about the new normal. You know, one issue that we had recently, obviously, with the pandemic was how do we support parents to continue to provide an education to their children in that pandemic,
yeah,
you know,
and
where we're all working remotely, working from home, etc. So it's not patronizing parents, but it's appreciating that it's a joint responsibility bringing up children, of which when you choose a school, that's a really important factor in the decisions that you make for your child. Mm-hmm. So we like to work with the parents, help them, support them, you know, maybe provide them with classes or information, but it really is a sort of holistic experience for them. We like to talk about our schools as a family, and I think that hopefully we're part of the wider family of our parents and the wider community.
Okay. All right. Let's just go for one quick break, Anthony. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how you guys are preparing for that new normal, you know, the different kind of skills that are needed, you know, how teachers must change, how students need to change. I'm speaking today to Anthony Partington. He's the executive principal of Sri KDU Schools. We're talking about the future of education and how we prepare our young ones for a future that we don't quite know yet. Keep it right here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me in the studio today is Anthony Partington. He's the executive principal of Sri KDU Schools. We're talking about the future of education. We're talking about how we can prepare students for the future, for a world that doesn't yet exist, that we don't know, that is, you know, full of surprises. Before the break, Anthony was telling us a little bit about how Sri KDU Schools, you know, they're like a community, how they are, you know, preparing families, parents and students, how they're a community growing together and trying to prepare for that future. Now, Anthony, if I can just talk to you about, I guess, you know, what the pandemic has taught us, right? That's sort of through education all over the place, let's just put it that way, right? And I think that whole idea of that concept of a teacher standing in front of a room full of students, you know, who listen, who respond to direction, that's, I think we all know, increasingly a thing of the past. Well, that's my thoughts. I mean, would you agree with that?
I would really, and I think we've been on that pathway for some time now. You know, schools, it is argued, were designed to create people who would work in factories, and there is a sort of factory element to some schools, people sitting in rows, learning things, taking instruction from a manager, as it were. And I think that role of the teacher as manager has changed to the role of teacher as facilitator. That's been happening some time, but the pandemic really accelerated that. What we saw in the pandemic, we've been talking about digital schools and about, you know, the role of IT in schools for as long as I've been at school.
Okay.
And that's 40 years now, but it never really happened. And I think what the pandemic showed us is that it's the skills that we teach children that are really important. It was the skills that we were able to use to adapt to the pandemic. And my colleagues had to demonstrate those skills, skill of adaptability, resilience, creativity. We don't want students who we are teaching about what we think will be the future, because a bit like science fiction, what we think is the future is only about 5 years away, you know. And if you think about the iPhone, it came out in 2007, and now you couldn't imagine a world without a smartphone in that style. So we actually need to prepare students for a future that we couldn't even possibly think about. You know, if you imagine the length of time that people live now, you know, in a 60-year period, it's only 60 years ago since we put a rocket into the sky and a man on the moon.
Yeah.
That's not a long time. And that potentially for some of our students is the length of their careers or the length of the time that they will continue to learn and work after they've left school.
Yeah.
So we have to focus, I think, on a wider curriculum. Of course, academic qualification is really important. That is the marker of whether somebody has learned something. But it's not the marker of whether they can continue to learn something. We also need to make sure that we're focusing on students who might have a different idea about what they want to do in the future. So an element of choice is really important for us as well. So, you know, we look at different pathways through them. And one of the pathways that we've really focused on is a language-based pathway.
Okay.
Because I think that, you know, contrary to what may have happened in my own country, where people are turning their back on sort of international and global groups, I actually think that the future is probably the world is much smaller, and the future will be about working across borders. It will be working remotely. It will be communicating with people remotely. I mean, some years ago, we would have thought nothing of all jumping on a plane to go to a meeting to bring people together. I think that's possibly not going to happen very much now. Yeah, maybe it might happen once to kick off a relationship, but I think people are quite comfortable working remotely, and we have to have our students who are able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So communication, whether that's in a foreign language or being able to use through digital means, is also really important. And those are the things that I hope that we are now teaching our students, because from the pandemic, we learned a lot. It would have been really easy to slip back to what we used to do. And I'm really pleased to say that we haven't done that. And we are using some of the techniques and some of the learning from the pandemic to change and adapt the way that we teach now in school as well.
And that's really wonderful to hear. And of course, you know, I mean, teachers struggled as much as the students, as much as the parents during this pandemic, isn't it? What are your ideas about the way teaching is delivered and how it's still, I suppose, there's still room for improvement, how it still might be reshaped for the future?
Yeah, I mean, it is a constantly evolving picture.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, as I was saying earlier, I think the teacher as facilitator is a development. We're moving away from, people talk about that upfront teaching, as you described it as before, as the sage on the stage. So this idea that yes. You know, the children are enthralled to this person and they listen, etc. But actually, quite a lot of that is pretty low-order learning. We actually learn and embed our learning through discussion, through questioning, and going deeper into a subject. So certain things that are happening in schools, we're sort of flipping the idea of learning. And you may have heard of this concept of flipped learning, which is the low-order learning takes place at home. And the analytical, the deep dive takes place in school, and we make better use of school. People talk about, you know, oh, we'll have online schools in the future, etc. And I think they forget that actually school is about social development as much as it is about academic learning.
Yeah.
I don't think we will have online only schools,
yes.
But I think that we may have a blended experience of learning where some learning, which is just about acquisition of knowledge or rehearsing a routine or something like that, which has traditionally happened in schools, I think we can move that into a sort of digital sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then that analysis and that conversation and those deeper dives, that's the thing that can take place in school itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so maximising what actually happens in the school in that sense,
correct,
right?
Because yeah. you know, if we do say that teachers are experts in their field, we're not really using them if all they're doing is imparting knowledge.
Yes.
You know, Socrates used to teach people just by asking questions, because the ideas are actually in your head.
Yeah.
It's the teacher's responsibility to draw out the understanding, mm-hmm. not to impart the knowledge.
Not to be that sage on the stage. I love that phrase. And, you know, speaking about our students themselves, right, what do you think the skills the future generations will need? And what is it that we can do in the classrooms to sort of develop these skills?
Well, I think we talked before about adaptability. And we talked about communication. One of the things that we've developed across our schools are a number of what we call leadership programs. Now, leadership can be everything from leading your own life right the way through to, you know, being a global leader,
sure.
as many of our students have gone on to do. And we look at things like empathy. We look at resilience. We look, of course, at digital proficiency. And we also, yes, do put students in leadership positions, those traditional positions that you would have in school. But I think it's a whole range of skills that we are giving students the opportunity to develop throughout their career. I said before, academic learning is vitally important. Academic qualification is really important. But I've often said, and my colleagues might get sick of me saying this, but qualifications get you to the interview, but it's your character and your personality that gets you the job. And it's the skills that you have that make you thrive in that job and make you thrive in life.
Yeah.
How often do I use my maths? Every day. But I spend most of my time talking, listening to other people, empathizing with them, facing problems, being resilient, being adaptable. Pandemic happens, I have to be creative. You know, so we try to give students those opportunities in school. Often there's no system around those things. There's no accreditation around those things. And therefore they're regarded as low value, when in fact they're actually high order. And so one of the things that we have tried to do is put in place programs around that. So we have a My Leader program for our secondary students. We have a Robin program for our primary students. But then again, these are giving them an opportunity to work towards some form of accreditation, but it scaffolds what they're doing. It gives them stretch and challenge. Their tutor or their class teacher can mentor them and say, well, you need to move on and do this. You can go for your bronze award, your silver award, etc. It just gives it a little bit of status, mm-hmm. and it shows that we value it as well. And, you know, somebody once said, you know, you don't value what you measure. You measure what you value. And this gives us that opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was something I wanted to ask you about as well. You know, I mean, results, they don't actually define you, isn't it? That's pretty much what you've been saying. So I suppose you're finding ways for the education to sort of like prove that as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on the future of standardized assessments?
They have their place. And as I said before, you know, a qualification is always going to be important.
Yeah.
Our schools work toward SPM or to IGCSE, A-level, IB. People will always want to see those in the mix.
Parents especially.
Yeah, exactly. And also employers.
Sure.
And also if students go on to further education or higher education, these are good markers that these are good learners. They're not the only markers, though. And I know lots of universities are aware of this, and I know lots of employers are aware of this. So there are sort of one criterion, but they're not everything these days. And I think that's important. I think testing has changed in schools as well. Most of the testing that takes place in our schools is diagnostic. It's formative assessment. Mm. It allows us to identify where students have gaps in their learning, where their skills might be developed, and allows us to adapt that learning, adapt the tuition so that we can fill those gaps and make sure that that person is completely rounded in that particular subject area. Similarly, as I was saying with our leadership programs, you know, a child might be great at empathy, but they may not be great at resilience. So we can target them to that and say, you know, you really need to, if you're going to get your whole award, your bronze award or your silver award, you really need to target this. That's really important as well. Quite often, standardized testing in the past was very summative. It came at the end. Yeah. It was very absolute.
Yep.
It divided, you know, the sheep from the goats or the wheat from the chaff or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's not what we want to do. We don't want to set people up to fail. We want to make sure that they achieve these accreditations, but also that we are using testing and assessment to shape, to mold, to encourage.
Mm-hmm. And I hear you, you know, so we do need those assessments. But, you know, from that, we can draw up learning plans. We can draw up a more personalized sort of approaches for the students. And that's what you guys are doing at Sri KDU as well.
That's right.
That's awesome. Okay. And if we can just talk a little bit about technology now. I mean, that's, you know, as we said, has created endless boundaries of where learning can occur, with whom, with why. How can we use this to the students' advantage? You know, as we teach them how to handle problems, as you mentioned, that, I don't know, might even arise from the use of technology, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. I mean, there's a huge piece of work about e-safety. Mm. And one of the issues with technology is there is often a remove between an adult's experience of technology and a child's experience
yes.
of technology. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, the children know more than I do.
Yep.
They may do, but they know how to use that technology, i.e. functionally, but they don't know how to be critical of that technology. Mm. So again, some of the things that we are quite keen on in our schools group is educating students to be safe online, but also how to discriminate between what's fake, what's real. Is this a trusted source? How do we know it's a trusted source? How can we check that? You know, years ago when you used to go to the library, pull an encyclopedia off, you would know that that had been written by somebody, it had been edited by somebody. Somebody had probably gone through it legally to check that those things were, then a publisher had put it all together. There were many, many checks of that information. These days, you can whack anything online, yeah?
Yes.
And everybody's an editor and a publisher,
yeah,
as well as a writer. So we have to make sure that students are aware of that. What's a trusted news source? Those kinds of things. The other thing that I think people often think is that students are very intuitive, you know, and they are to a certain extent, but they still don't know everything. And therefore, we can give them a range of skills. You know, one thing, for example, that students are not very good at, and they never have been, is tidying up or keeping order.
Sure.
And we have to educate them about that. I mean, you know, how many people have a messy desktop?
Oh, yes.
Same number of people have a messy desk, yeah?
Yep.
So ordering things and being organised, those are still things. But now, instead of teaching them about you need to pack your school bag before the school day, we have to educate them that you need to sort out your folders, you need to save things to the cloud, you need to back them up. You know, all of those things are really important as well. I think one of the failings in the past about technology was that it was used in schools in an artificial way.
Okay.
It was used in schools in a bolt-on way. Tasks were created around technology rather than incorporating technology into tasks. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sitting here with a laptop in front of me. You know, we're talking, there's lots of technology around
sure.
us. It isn't actually impeding our conversation. It's adding to our conversation in the same way that a pen and pencil would have done in the past. It's about, you know, creating those spaces for learning, and that's the way that we need to get students to understand that's the role for technology in schools. It's not tokenistic, it's not gesture, it's where is it embedded in learning.
Mm-hmm. And do you think just looking at the pandemic, do you think that has also accelerated the sort of digital transformation that we're going through? I mean, all the things that you mentioned as well. I mean, how do you see education evolving, you know, as we head into that new digital age that we're all heading to?
Well, I think one of the things that technology has done with all of us is that it's anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
If learning was limited by the school day, then that concept doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So, mentioned the idea of flipping learning, but what's home learning now? And things that we are looking at within our schools is, can we give students who are keen the opportunity to get further accreditation or further learning in a sort of virtual school environment? It doesn't replace physical school for the reasons I described before about the social development of school, the character development, etc. But these are further opportunities that we could provide that we wouldn't have been able to do before. We can change the nature of home learning. So it's about knowledge and about preparing for things rather than about what it used to be, which is finish this essay off at home, read this book. You know, that was consolidating and embedding. And actually, it would have been useful to have somebody there when you were doing that. I mean, you know, my parents always tell me about the way that maths got taught when I was young. It was different to the way that maths got taught.
Yeah.
And when I was doing my homework, they had no idea how to do division.
Aww.
And therefore, you know, this is, we talked about helping parents. If we do that, we put parents and their children in some kind of conflict, where if the children are doing that kind of work in a school environment, then they've got their teacher to help them out rather than relying on, you know, their family who weren't even there when that was taught.
Yeah.
So I think technology is changing the way that we will consider what an education is, because it's changed what a school is, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And something else that, you know, I think we've learned from, you know, these past 2 years as well, and I think, you know, our younger generation as well, they are taking that more to heart, the concept of inequity, you know, how we all need to build back better. Do you think that, you know, for our young ones especially, those days of going to school to get a job, you know, the things that you were mentioning just now, that could slowly be replaced by critically learning so that we come to understand what must be done? So I'm talking about things like just social inequity, even education inequity. We're talking about the climate crisis, all these different issues which will affect the future generation. How do we, you know, think about that when educating them in the schools, in schools as well?
Well, I think one of the things that we do in our schools is teach students to be good people and aware
so
of the communities in which they live. The pandemic did actually show up some of those inequities because of things like a digital divide.
Yeah.
And we had a situation where, luckily, within our schools, we have a bring-your-own-device policy. That's part of being part of our school community. But there are many schools where learning moved digitally, but children didn't have the internet, they didn't have the hardware to access that learning. And therefore, you know, I know the government took steps to put things on the television and to roll out hardware to less affluent communities. But it is really important that we, as we move forward, look at those inequities and we make sure that our students and our communities are aware of those and that we support them. You know, it's always been really important to me that schools are at the heart of their community. And yes, we may be fee-paying schools, but we still are part of that wider community. And the things that we can do through our leader programs to support those students, you know, reach out, whether that's charitable giving, whether that's working with young people, these are all valuable lessons as well. And through doing that, we hope that we sort of bridge that divide, and we hope we narrow those gaps, because that's how we get our society better, really. Through, I've always been a great believer that education is a great leveler, and it's also a good step up, and certainly was my step up, and I want us to be able to spread that to other people too.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just so important, teaching our children, you know, what is good and how to be good. I mean, it comes intuitively, but, you know, just, you know, giving the right sort of direction, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
we celebrate all the major Malaysian festivals, all the religious and cultural festivals. And a key part of that is always to acknowledge that we're a lot better off than most people.
Yeah.
So an element of that is always about giving to others, and it's about including those other people as well.
Mm-hmm. And nurturing understanding,
correct,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for joining me today. Before I let you go, maybe some final thoughts. You know, what do classrooms of today need to focus on for students to succeed in the future? What do you think education will look like, or what should it aspire to?
Well, I think education should aspire to building good people. We talk about building future leaders. What we mean by that is that we want students to positively impact on their society. Mm-hmm. And for that to happen, it's about fostering skills. Certainly academic qualification and outcomes are a given. They're really important. We have great academic outcomes in our schools, but I'm also very proud of the fact that we have a real focus on enhancing our curriculum, a co-curriculum that develops character, that develops skill, and that's what we should be doing. We don't know what the future is going to look like, so we have to be adaptable, resilient, and we have to be able to empathise with people who are going through change and scaffold and help them get there.
Scaffold and help them get there. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Anthony Partington, Executive Principal of Sri KDU Schools. We were talking about the future of education. And if you'd like to find out more about Sri KDU, just head to their website, srikdu.edu.my. All the information is there. You can find out more about the school. And if you miss any part of today's interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.